Welcome to the Cup and Saucy Book Club. I'm Jen.
And I'm Zanna.
What's in your cup today, Zanna?
I'm drinking Assam Melody from Adagio Teas. It's just a very basic black tea, but it's nice and smooth. How about you?
Well, I've got a new mic that some wonderful, generous person gave me.
This was
Zanna's Christmas gift to me, was a new microphone, and I'm absolutely loving it, and I finally got it to work. I'm not really sure how, but it is very sensitive, and it picks up everything. So right now, I am falling back on all of the narrators that we have talked to, and so I'm having lemon water and my singer's tea and hoping that that reduces it just a little bit. Because it is very early in the morning for me, and I have not yet had breakfast, so we're trying this out. And
yeah,
this is our first recording in my finished booth. My booth is all finished, all done.
Yay!
So Zanna, please remind our listeners what I assigned you to read this month.
You gave me Double Pucked by Lauren Blakely.
And what did you think?
It was fine. It wasn't my favorite book ever, but it wasn't the worst thing I've ever read either. It's very light, which was good.
Yes, because we've done a lot of, you know, dark and heavy.
It was a nice departure from some of the heavy stuff that we've gone through recently. It was very easy to get through.
Yes.
You know, I got it done in basically a day because it's not that long. I think it's 9 hours or something like that. You gave me the audiobook to listen to because it's a duet. It is sort of duet narration. It's a trio narration with dear friend of the show, Samantha Brentmore. And she is the female main character, but she also voices a few male characters.
Because she has one of the best guy voices
in the
business.
She does have a great guy voice. I must say that her guy voice is fantastic.
Yes.
And then J.F. Harding is one of the characters. And then also Robert Hatchett is the other male character. Both of them are great. The narration was very good. However, I have a small quibble with the narration. I feel like it was slightly miscast. I feel like that J.F. Harding should have been playing the part that Robert Hatchett played and vice versa. Just
interesting.
That was what I expected, because I kept getting confused by the male main characters, and one of them had the voice that I pictured for the other and vice versa. And so I felt like, and that was part of the issue that I had with it, is that I felt like for my ears, it was a little bit miscast. And I think they both are fantastic narrators. I just would have liked to have seen them in each other's roles.
Have flipped over. Yeah.
Right. In general, though, the narration was good. The story was fine. It was just, I didn't quite see the point of having two guys since they were almost the same. I mean, they had different personalities to a point. Like, one is sort of sunshiny and one is grumpy, but they're both hockey players. And they're both protectors, and they're both, maybe I just don't like male-female-male romance, or maybe I would have enjoyed it more if they were also into each other. I don't know. I just...
Saving that one for later.
I felt it was sort of a superfluous romance.
Like, a superfluous setup?
What is this other person really bringing to the mix? The male-female-male thing was there for the sake of being a male-female-male romance instead of having some particular reason for attachment to each other. Like, I didn't entirely understand why both men were so invested in the woman, and I didn't understand why the woman was so invested in both men. I couldn't figure out exactly why they got so attached so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, there's this fantastic sex that they have, and that's great, and you know, sex is wonderful, but I didn't feel like beyond the sex that they had a whole lot.
Yeah, where is the
spark? Right.
Yeah,
it's harder to make that work in a male female male romance where you're trying to get everybody emotionally invested, because you're actually doing triple the work because you've got different dynamics in the relationship, right? So you've got the male-female dynamic, but then you've got the woman in male one, the woman in male two, the male-male. Even if it's not crossed swords, as they say, it's still a relationship.
They still have
dynamic.
A relationship, yeah.
Yeah. So and they still are dependent on each other within this framework. And so I felt like the book wasn't long or in-depth enough to really sink into that relationship dynamic for me to find it believable. Again, it was an easy read, and it was not, I didn't hate it. I mean, it was enjoyable to a point, but it was also like, I don't really buy any of these relationships.
All right. Well, okay. It's not that I feel like I have to defend any of the books that I give you.
Okay. But you can.
In this case, I feel like I do, because this is your first introduction to Lauren Blakely, and she's a favorite author of mine.
Yeah.
Because she writes generally like, let's have some fun while we get to the happy ending kind of books.
Sure.
And the reason why she's a favorite of mine is because I know that when I read a Lauren Blakely book, I'm going to feel better, you know, particularly after reading a very dark romance. And the last book that we reviewed was Girl on the Edge, which was psychologically
dark. Yeah.
Dark and
it was painful.
Emotionally
it was,
dark.
You know, I mean, it was well written, but it was also like it hurt. You know, it was
a whole lot of heavy. And I felt like we needed to, you know, just have a chaser of fun and frivolous. And
it definitely was that. It was definitely that. I will admit 100% that this was a fun book. It was something that.
Yes.
But it was more porn than actual, you know, emotional investment of any kind.
You say erotica, Zanna.
I'm sorry. It was more erotica than actual.
Yes, it was erotica.
I'm sorry. But if it looks like porn and it acts like porn, it's porn.
I mean,
if it looks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, it's probably a fucking duck, right? But...
Or a ducking fuck.
But
in this case.
I will say that the porn was really good.
Yes. Yes.
So, I mean, as
Lauren
as
Blakely
erotica,
writes a good sex scene, she really does.
Lauren Blakely writes a very comprehensive sex scene.
Yes, indeed.
I will say that she is adept at writing the naughty bits. And if that's why you're reading erotica or romance, this is a good book for you. I mean, because there's a lot of it. There's a lot of it. And there's not a lot of plute. And I mean to say plute, not plot. But there is a tremendous amount of sex. And it's, you know, it's steamy sex for sure.
Yeah.
But again, it's very much like bow chicka wow wow kind of sex.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, and here's another thing, is that this was Lauren Blakely's first thruple. You know, there she did do another book that was where there was a sex scene with two men, but that was not the relationship. This was like a one-time kind of thing, and it was related to, you know, it related to the book. It made sense for that book. Like, the HEA does not involve three people. It involves two people. And so she has dipped her toe into this arena, but this is her first book where there is a thruple HEA. And it's the first of the Pucking series, because there is two other books with this. I wanted to start with the first one, though, because it makes more sense, you know, in terms of the characters and the people that you see. And they are standalone-ish. You know, it's not like there's no cliffhanger.
They're connected world. But they're
connected in world. And actually, Lauren Blakely books are all interconnected.
They're all in
Blakely
land.
They all live in Blakely land, and one of these days I am going to map out, you know, Lauren Blakely world, because
okay,
but what you will see is things that weave in through other books are
okay,
you know, if a character is goes to, like, when they go to a coffee shop in Double Puck, it's mm-hmm. it's Dr. Insomnia's. Dr. Mm-hmm. Insomnia's is run by a main character in another book.
I see.
You know, and so it's things like that. It's like small, small reminders of
these
other
books.
That's
pretty cool. I like that kind of thing. Yeah. I like where you can kind of see different, you're basically looking into our universe through different windows. And
yeah,
that's kind of cool. I do like it when authors kind of world build within their own
Books, and it's not okay, here is 15 pages of exposition explaining
right
what this right. world is. It's just
right
it's these
just
little Easter eggs.
Yeah, it's little Easter eggs of information about that world and the people in it, and I, you know, that's cool. That's, I really enjoy that kind of thing. One thing that I must say, so the other thing about this, which is pretty obvious from the title, is that it's a hockey romance.
Yes.
And so it's not the first hockey romance that I've read, but it's kind of the first one that I've enjoyed in any capacity.
Okay.
But one thing that I really liked about it is that it explained within the book, it explained the hockey romance trope. And within the book, basically, she says that it's, you know, that this, that it's about the suits. And this is something that is a hockey tradition, is that after
yes.
every hockey game, and I think before, the players
yes.
come out in, like, nice business suits.
Yeah, they're all dressed up.
Yeah.
And
you know, and I looked this up a little bit, and it is basically, it's a tradition that goes back not quite 100 years, but close, you know.
Yeah.
And it has to do with showing respect for the game and the mm-hmm. institution of hockey, and of the traditions, it's pretty good, I think.
Yeah.
But it made me think of a couple of things. The other thing is that I think we've talked about this in an episode that hasn't aired yet. The idea of hockey as a major sport. I mean, hockey has some popularity. I'm not saying that it's not popular.
Oh, it definitely does.
But what makes hockey work as a romance sport is that there aren't as many people who are as just, there aren't as many husbands and boyfriends that are so invested in hockey as there are in some of the other sports. And so it's easier to create, yeah, it's easier to create a fantasy world around a sport that doesn't take away your loved ones.
Yeah. I mean, not to say that there aren't hockey widows. There are hockey widows.
Oh, no, for sure. Yeah, no, I mean, hockey is still a major, major sport that has a lot of interest.
Particularly
but
in
like
the North,
Northern
the
Stanley
US
Cup,
and
which
the...
is, yeah, but the Stanley Cup, which is the major, you know, the playoff for hockey, which also makes me wonder if these pink Stanley Cups have anything to do with the surge in hockey romance. People
yeah.
are like, oh, well, I want a Stanley Cup. Isn't that a hockey thing? I mean, I know Stanley Cup and the Stanley Cup are two different things. I do know
yeah.
that, but I'm wondering if there's like this psychological underpinning that it's just like, oh, I'll have my own Stanley Cup. And
I
can
hadn't
have
thought
my,
of that, but maybe.
My hockey player.
Yeah.
So I guess the thing is that it's the Stanley Cup isn't broadcast on major network television. It's on TNT.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like the Super Bowl was on CBS.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
you know, the World Series is on whatever channel, the World Series. I don't
and
know.
Now,
I
and
the
now
World
the
Series.
World Cup is taking over all of that.
Yeah. And the World Cup is also on, a, you know, places like that. But the Stanley Cup is not on major
right.
network television.
Yeah.
It hasn't grown to that level yet. Yes, it is. It has some popularity, but it's not. So you've got this sort of hulky, kind of strong athletes with great legs because of all the skating. And also there's something phallic about the hockey sticks, of course.
Right.
And then you also have them in suits. So you've got your sort of billionaire romance trope.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thing. So, I mean, it makes me understand.
Because hockey players aren't well paid. I hate to say it this way, but rich enough.
Yeah, no, they're definitely rich enough. But so, like, this is set in San Francisco area. And as far as I could tell, there's not two major NHL teams
yeah.
in the San Francisco
so
Bay Area.
This is another thing. As a Bay Area native,
right.
So I'm going to speak about Lauren Blakely's world building in terms of San Francisco, because I have a major, major problem when people get San Francisco wrong. And I have DNF'd more books because they've never been to San Francisco in their lives, and you can tell.
I understand. Yeah.
Lauren Blakely has been to San Francisco, and what I like about her, how she writes this city, is that okay? Yes, she puts two rival NHL teams in San Francisco. There isn't a single one. The closest NHL team we have is in San Jose.
San Jose, right?
Is in San Jose, and that's an hour away. There is no NHL team in San Francisco. However, the way that Lauren Blakely did it was that she could create it within this world and make it whatever she wanted. And the two teams are the Avengers and the Sea Dogs. But San Francisco itself, you know, when she talks about that Trina's got an apartment in the Mission and you know, she knows the neighborhood. She knows the vibes of the neighborhood. And then she weaves in her own world that she's built into San Francisco. Because this isn't the only one that. This isn't the only Lauren Blakely book that's set in San Francisco. There's actually several.
Well, as you mentioned, the coffee shop, right?
So. Yeah, you're right. So, and then she's got, you know, ones that are set pretty much. There's a New York section of them, and then there's like the whole Pacific Coast, up and down. So
nothing
Seattle.
In the middle. Just Pacific Coast in New York. Nothing in the middle.
Not for Lauren Blakely anyway.
Sorry, as somebody who grew up in a flyover state, that's
Well, she's also got London and London and Paris.
My state didn't make it in the Rand McNally Atlas one year.
Oh wow.
I'm bitter about people who don't pay attention.
Well, she also doesn't include Texas, Florida, you know, I mean, other like large states. That the way that she is. So I have read books where, you know, they describe things like the Sacramento Chronicle. It's like, if you're going to name a newspaper in Sacramento that doesn't exist, don't take it from a city that is a San Francisco Chronicle.
Right.
That is two hours away. You know, this is a note to new authors or up and coming authors. If you are writing about a city that you have never been to,
do a lot of research.
Google searches. Do some research. Look at some maps. You know, get
do Google Street View.
Do Google Street
walk around.
View. Yeah, like virtually walk around the city that you're talking about. Yeah, Lauren Blakely does this very well, and it's one of the reasons that she's a favorite of mine, is because she respects the city of San Francisco and yet still builds these imaginary places into it, and it looks like it could exist there, you know?
Sure.
And some of them, I wish they did exist there.
So I don't know much about San Francisco. I've been there a handful of times, but so I, of course, take your word for it. But that was not a selling point for me, other than, you know, it was the world was believable enough that it didn't that wasn't an issue. Other than the hockey team thing that just hockey is just not that big a thing. You know, I mean, I know Romancelandia loves hockey, but it's just not that huge a thing. I mean, it's kind of like. But I do see that it is the suits do have a lot to do with it.
It's totally a suits thing. And then there's the whole, then you get, because hockey works in can work in a lot of tropes. Like
it does. And it's punny as hell. I mean, and that helps too.
God.
So, you know, the pucking thing. It's so pucking punny that it works.
Well, and then you've got the possessive alpha thing with the tradition of women wearing their guy's jersey. This is a big deal in hockey for, you know, you wear my jersey, it means something. If you wear some other guy's jersey, that means something too. You know, and then there's the superstitions, and there's a lot of traditions in hockey that can be used in romance, which is why it's a big deal.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I definitely understand it, you know, thanks to this book and the explanation, and it drew a lot of conclusion points for me that I agree with all of that. I agree that it's, you know, but I'm like, try something else, you know. there's other options.
Oh, there are.
I do like
options.
Hockey, and I even like hockey. I actually like the sport. Of course, I watch it for the fights, but and they're not as prevalent as they used to be.
Well, my mom's a hockey fan, which surprises the hell out of me because she. You know, I grew up in a household where a lot of football was watched, some baseball, you know, so those sports were in the consciousness.
In your cultural background, yeah.
In my cultural background, like in my house. And my mom was a widow to all of it. Mm-hmm. You know, she's just like, football, you know, and goes to the other room. This is the entirety of my childhood is that conversation.
Right.
Was funny to me when later in life she discovered hockey and became a Detroit Red Wings fan. And she chose Detroit because that's where my grandmother grew up, is in the Michigan area. It was just like, yeah, now I'm a Red Wings fan and this is so much fun to watch. And I was like, who are you?
Right?
Who are you? Who is this woman? You know, because this is not the woman that I grew up with who was going sports and disgusting. So, so there has to be something about it that, you know, that makes
it
us
is,
go to.
I mean, it is graceful. And, you know, it is, you know, you're gliding at very fast speeds.
Yeah. And that takes balance,
that takes
coordination,
skill, and
I mean,
and you're also, you know, moving around this tiny little thing with a stick, and you know, and it's
and the puck is not that big.
It's
not that big.
No,
you know, and yeah, it's black on white ice, but still, it's a hard thing to follow around.
I don't know. I mean, so I'm sort of I get it. I do get the appeal of the hockey thing. I guess I've only a couple books into hockey romance and I'm kind of over it is part of it. So
okay, like so no maybe, hockey romances for like, a while.
Well, it's yeah, maybe not. I just
okay. Well,
there's something,
then
there's
I'm
something about
changing
it
what
that,
I'm giving you for your because the next one was a hockey romance too.
Oh.
So
oh, the next one was a hockey romance too? Oh my goodness.
Because it's another hockey romance. So let me switch that around. But so I do want to talk about the story, though, a little bit. Because the premise of this thing is that Trina, who is her boyfriend is, at the beginning of the book, her boyfriend's really into hockey. Mm-hmm. She's
a hockey widow for sure.
She's a hockey widow for sure. She's never really watched the game, has no interest. She's a manager of a bookstore and she's got a little dog. Lauren Blakely has
a three-legged
dog. Yeah,
a little three-legged.
And it's actually an homage to one of Lauren Blakely's dogs who is a rescue.
Okay. So I like the dog.
the dog is adorable.
Nacho, right?
Nacho, yeah, little Nacho. And little Nacho has a panty fetish.
Right.
And
which I have opinions about. But
yeah.
I know there are dogs that do that, but I've also never mind. You know what? I'm not even gonna go.
Yeah.
There.
So what happens at the very beginning of the book is that Nacho is fond of eating dirty underwear. Specifically Trina's dirty underwear that he gets from the hamper.
Right.
He eats enough at one point that he has to go to the vet to have his stomach pumped. And when the vet pumps the stomach, he finds underwear that is not hers.
Right.
So she finds out, this is how she finds out her boyfriend is cheating on her.
It's a kind of underwear that she doesn't want to wear ever. And he actually keeps pressing yeah. her into wearing something like this.
Yeah. Right. And so, and he suggested that it's a thong. Mm-hmm. We can state it. It's in the first chapter. So
right.
it's, you know, the vet finds a thong. And, mm-hmm. like, they can reconstruct the whole thing.
Right.
The boyfriend has been saying, you know, hey, babe, you can wear a thong and that little short dress. And I got these VIP tickets that I won to a hockey game.
Right.
And, you know, let's do that.
I've been in an ice hockey rink. I've been in an ice hockey rink. And I would not want to wear.
And she's like, I'm going to freeze my ass off.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, you don't want to wear a short dress.
She's like, I'm going to freeze my ass off, and I'm wearing butt floss. You know, this is not going to happen. And so when she finds out that
hypothermia is not sexy.
No. Blue toes, blue lips. No, mm-mm. not sexy. But when she finds it, she brings the evidence back to show him, and. Mm. I actually thought that this was as revenge goes. I thought this was actually pretty cool. So she confronts him and he's like, oh, babe, it was just this one time and I want us to stay together, you know, and you find out mostly because he needs her to pay the rent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's like, you know, she decides that give me a few hours to just, you know, work through my feelings and I just need to be
right.
alone in the place for a few hours and, you know, you can come back and we'll talk about it. Well, in that few hours, she packs up all of her stuff, calls a friend and to, you know, say, come get me. And as she's going out, the bestie's in the car, you know, waiting to take her away. Mm-hmm. She sees the VIP tickets that he won. Now, he didn't buy
right.
them. I think that I would have been more upset with what she did if he had bought them.
Yeah.
But the fact that he won them.
It's still a little potentially on the realm of theft.
Technically, yeah. But he did cheat on her. And
sure. I mean,
we all need our revenge fantasies.
Sure.
You know?
I mean, it's perfect as a revenge fantasy. As a reality, there's potential. True, but as a potentially, so as revenge fantasy, it's perfect. Potentially, she is legally liable for this.
Yeah, potentially.
Yeah. If he had a good lawyer, she would be screwed.
Yeah, but he needs her for the rent to help with the rent money. So I'm thinking he doesn't have a good lawyer.
Right.
So she takes the tickets
now,
and
in the court of public opinion. Yeah, no, I mean, that's clearly not on his side.
Because, you know, her argument could be, well, you nearly killed my dog with your cheating.
That's
so,
true. That's true. This is, I'm taking this as recompense for
yeah,
the pain
yeah,
and suffering
so
of my dog.
I can totally justify it with that right there.
Plus, he was planning to take her.
Yes.
So in some ways,
so
he had already gifted her part of this.
At least one of
with
the tickets.
With the intent to take her to
right.
this thing.
And yeah. she had ready to go a couple of the team jerseys from his favorite players and a couple of pucks, and mm-hmm. she was planning on having them sign it and gift it to him. So
this
she takes
VIP
those
experience,
two.
Yes, this VIP experience involved meeting his favorite players from these two rival teams.
Yes.
And so and then
who
he was
are,
supposed to, like...
Chase and Riker, who are...
names in these books just kill me.
Okay, you know, we have to own to the generational here, because millennial names and Gen Z names are going to
I know
not,
and I get not, that too, but even I don't know, I just I with Riker I kept thinking of Star Trek
of Star Trek even though it's not spelled the same. But
I'm
yes.
listening to it, though. I'm not reading it.
Yeah,
with my
yeah.
Animals, so,
yeah.
I mean, does it matter?
But So going back, so she takes the tickets, mm-hmm. and she and her bestie go, and they hold up signs saying, mm-hmm. you know, hey, ex-boyfriend, you know, right. What do you think of these
you
seats?
Shouldn't have cheated or whatever it was.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Cheating ex-boyfriend. And so part of the VIP experience is that she gets to go out with the two rival players who are actually friends since elementary school. So right. they just happen to be on rival teams. And so it friendly rivalry is
this is another
really
one of
here.
Those this was another one of those what are the odds? I mean, I guess it's because it's a romance book thing, but what are the odds that this dude's Jasper, the ex-boyfriend, his favorite players in the NHL happen to be best friends from childhood?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, like, this is where suspension of disbelief comes into play.
I know, but still.
Yeah, right. Well, and so
like you said, it's brain candy. It's, you know,
yeah,
it is
brain candy.
There's nothing,
and this is a palate
nothing
cleanser
super deep
after
here.
The dark.
Yeah, it's yeah, absolutely a palate the cleanser. There's nothing deep here. You know, it's a thin layer of ice.
Well, and it was so Riker tells her they go to the location where they're going to, you mm-hmm. know, hang out at a bar and go play pool and ping pong and all of this stuff. Well, it turns out that she actually picked out the place.
Right.
So she
and
doesn't
the
mind going.
Boyfriend had wanted to go to a strip club.
Yeah, boyfriend had wanted to take these two hockey players to a strip club, and they're like, "Wow, this dude is a piece of work." And so they, Riker tells her, he's like, "You know, that was a pretty baller move that you did, because they saw the signs. It was up on the Jumbotron."
Right. Right.
They're like, "That was pretty cool," and so they. The two of them, Chase and Riker, decide that they're going to help this woman out with mm-hmm. with her, you know, revenge. And they tell her, you know what, take all the selfies you want. Take, you know, we'll set up a scenario. It'll all be good. And, mm-hmm. You know, we'll just do whatever we can to help you, because this guy is a
right.
douche. That
right.
then becomes the setup.
Right.
How... I will admit, how it leads to them all having sex together is another thing. And then it becomes a roommate to lovers trope.
Right. Right.
Because now she's
although,
out in an apartment.
Yeah.
And
so she doesn't have anywhere
she goes to stay with her bestie, but the bestie can't have dogs. Mm-hmm. So she has to leave there, and the guys offer to have her stay with them.
Yeah. Chase has a great big apartment with lots of room, and
yeah.
he is able to have dogs, and he loves Nacho from the start.
Yeah, he's a dog lover, and then it turns out that the vet that she went to see to get Nacho's stomach pumped has a YouTube channel that Chase
right.
is a fan of. You know, yes,
right,
okay,
and
there
he
were,
heard
there
the story
of...
about, yeah, and he heard the story on. About the panties being eaten by the dog, and so
yeah.
he was like, "Oh man,"
he's like,
busted.
"Oh, you were that one, yeah, right. okay."
It's like,
yeah,
oh,
so
wow.
That part was a little bit of a like, really, for me. I mean, you know, he can be a dog lover; that's totally cool. But the fact that he's watching
yeah.
the YouTube channel of the vet who she happens to take it to, and you know, that
suspension
was like,
of disbelief, Jen. That's what
oh,
you've been
yeah,
telling
yeah,
me
yeah.
all along.
Don't give me the pot kettle stuff.
Right.
I do have to ask, though,
uh-huh.
how did Chase Riker and Jasper, the ex, look through your murder-colored glasses?
So none of them set off, like, immediate stalkery vibes. Jasper is just a douche with, you know, he's very low motivation.
Yeah.
So I don't see him as somebody who's going to be a problem for her going forward
yeah.
because he's just not smart or motivated enough. I'm glad that she wasn't really pining over him, because she had clearly just settled for him.
Yes.
And
yeah.
so she got over him very quickly, and rightly so, because he was a sort of unbelievably, he was like a stereotype bad boyfriend. What yeah. I don't understand was why she was with him in the first place, other than rent. So
other than rent and you know, just
habit. Yeah, and he's nice habit. To the family. So that was the big thing yeah. is that he was approved by the family. And that's sort of this undercurrent within this whole thing for Trina is that she's trying to always do, you know, she's trying to live up to the expectations of her parents and her sister, who is like good at everything. And
yeah, yeah. And she's trying to get, if not total family approval, at least that she's not the one
out from under the disapproval.
Yeah, out from under the criticism at every family mm-hmm. gathering, you know.
Right.
So
right.
Which I can.
And this is,
you know
the right. parents are or the mother is like, oh, when are you getting married and having kids like your sister who is?
Why aren't you more like your sister? This.
Why aren't you more like your sister?
Yeah,
right.
that is what she has to deal with.
The guys, again, I don't really see them as being. I don't see them through murder-colored glasses because they don't seem quite real to me.
Huh, okay.
And I think that might be part of why I was able to not see them in kind of a problematic thing is because I don't quite buy them as people. They seem like they're fantasies and not humans. And
right.
I think that was one of the biggest problems that I had with the book is that they seem like wish fulfillment fantasies for Trina. Like, if she had woken up from a coma at the end of the book, I would have bought that.
It was all a dream.
I hate that trope. I hate that
yeah,
trope.
Yeah, I hate
ever
that
since
trope.
Dallas, ever since Dallas did that with Bobby Ewing, but...
Gen X reference for the younger audience.
Gen X reference. I'm old, people. I am old. Back in the day when we used to watch Dallas on the CBS. Yeah, anyway... Yeah. They didn't set off my alarm bells because I don't believe that they're real.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Oh, totally makes sense. It totally makes sense.
Like, there's just too many. I mean, she goes through this whole thing that seems like it's like a really great sex dream.
Yeah. Yeah. Understand your point that if she had woken up from a coma or a really long dream. That,
and she found out that she was still with Jasper, then maybe
yeah.
She was like, oh, shit. I hate this guy. You know, I don't know these other guys and I'm sad that I don't know them, but you know, who they are in reality is probably not this.
Yeah.
But I got to get out of this relationship.
Yeah. For you,
because he's
for you will rewrite this ending and she has woken up from
yeah,
a coma.
Yeah. So I can see her having
Jasper
a happy ending.
Anyway.
Yes. As long as she leaves Jasper anyway, I can see this as a happily
yes.
ever after.
Yes.
With Trina and Nacho.
Yeah.
So, Now the other
I
guys.
I mean, folks, she leaves him in like the first chapter, so
yes, so no
like
spoiler there.
Him. No spoiler
and
there.
And she had, and no chance of her ever going back to him. You know, even
oh, no.
without
no,
the guys.
No.
You know, even without the guys, she knows she's better off without him. She's not.
Absolutely.
And that's one thing that is good is that she has left him. But I just sort of feel like maybe she's still asleep on her friend's couch and having
yeah.
like the best sex dream.
The best sex dream of her life. And
right.
there we go. Well, okay. So now I got to ask. On our 5-cup rating system, what do you give Double Pucked by Lauren Blakely?
Because of all of the things that I said, but I still got enjoyment out of it, I'm going to go with 3.5 cups.
Okay.
It was better than it had a right to be based on...
I like that. I will take 3.5 cups because of that.
As far as the audio performances are concerned, I'm going to give it 4. They were all great. But again, like I said, I would have cast it differently.
I would have switched
the
Riker and Chase.
Yeah.
yeah.
And I think that because I felt like Riker should have had a deeper, darker voice. And that's what Chase had.
Yeah.
And so and then the voice for Riker was a little too light. Not
yeah.
not high pitched, just friendlier,
lighter
somehow.
Yeah,
yeah, and so I felt like it kept bringing me out of the audiobook because I felt like those two should
reasonable.
Have been switched.
And on our new saucy scale,
oh, 5 saucers.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, it was very saucy. Like I said, it
this
was porn.
Is...
It was
yeah, yeah.
it was a fucking sex dream. Yeah. The real book it is was that Trina fell asleep on her friend's couch.
And she had the most awesome sex dream of her life.
It tracks for a sex dream. And yeah. As far as a sex, if that had been the ending, that she wakes up from this great sex dream, maybe a little bit more sexually liberated than she had been before, I think that's a great story. But it is. It's essentially, erotica, not porn.
It is erotica.
It's essentially porn.
See, porn has to have a visual component for me, so that's why it's erotica.
Okay,
not
so
porn.
It's erotica. Yeah.
Yeah.
How about you? How did you? I mean, this is clearly, it's one of your favorite authors. It's one of your.
It is one of my favorite authors. It is not one of my favorite books of hers. So I'm only going to give this one a 4.
Okay.
Because I do. While I love what Lauren Blakely's San Francisco looks like, and I want to live there, mm-hmm. I love her stuff and how she weaves things in. But I'm giving it a 4, and not lower, because this was her first real foray into thruples. And so it's not technically a thruple if it's male, female, male. But anyway, it's her first foray into something that is not male, female or male, male.
Well, polyamorous, I guess.
Yeah, it's polyamorous. But given that, she handled the material well.
Okay.
I've read better of, that same idea.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a 5, but Lauren Blakely is still one of my favorites and absolutely one of my go-to authors when I need a break from something.
Palette cleanser wise, it was great. I mean, based on the last one, it was super
After
Girl on the Edge was this long, slogging, very emotionally traumatic kind of book. And this was super short. And my biggest problem with it was that, it should have been a dream.
Yeah. Which I can go with that. Now, having said that about, that you're all hockey romanced out, I'm a little...
I can probably handle another one, but maybe if you've got something in your back pocket that,
since I'm not sure if you want to skate into another hockey romance for next month, let's let the audience decide. Listeners, I've got 2 options for Xana's next read. The first option is He's Not My Type by Megan Quinn. This is a rom-com multicast with our patron saint, Aaron Mallon, Connor Crace, Teddy Hamilton, Jason Clark, J.F. Harding, and Kelsey Navarro Foster. Option number 2 we just talked about last week with Angelina Rocca. It's Between Never and Forever by Britt Benson. It's a small town second chance rock star romance, and the audio is in duet with Angelina Rocca and one of Xana's favorites, Jacob Morgan. So tell us, listeners, which will it be? Leave us a comment on our socials with your choice for Xana's next read. If you would like to read along with Xana, please visit our website, Cup and Saucy Books, for links and show notes.
You can also follow us on social media at Cup and Saucy Books. We are on Instagram, Threads, and TikTok. Let us know if you have a book you would like us to review on the show. If you like what you're hearing, subscribe on your favorite pod platform and leave us a review.
Tonight is the Audie Awards, and you can catch the live broadcast on YouTube. One of the nominations for romance is Butcher and Blackbird, which we reviewed on the show and has been our number one episode.
Amazing.
Everybody's loving on this book, and we wish the best of luck to all the nominees.
Right.
Sneak peek of the episodes for this month. March 11th is Corvin King. March 18th is author Michelle Mars. And March 25th is Audie-nominated Lucy Rivers, and she is nominated for Butcher and Blackbird. Thank you for joining us for the Cup and Saucy Book Club. Join us next time for more great conversations with people from the world of books.
And probably a few tangents.
Happy reading.
Cheers.